from deep inside your radio.
Well, sir, I guess it was a slow news day. Or not. British government officials have backed the methods used by scientists who concluded that more than 600,000 Iraqis have been killed since the invasion. Remember, last November, there was that figure that came out in the British medical journal, The Lancet, and both British and American officials, including, is it President Bush, assailed the methodology. It's bad methodology. It was the findings were explicitly and publicly rejected by the British government. The BBC now says documents obtained under the Freedom of Information legislation in Britain, see, that's their mistake. Why would you want freedom of information? Shows advisors of the government concluded that the much-criticized study had used sound methodology. The study was conducted by researchers from Johns Hopkins and the a university in Baghdad, estimated that 655,000 more Iraqis had died since the invasion than one would expect without the war. And it estimated that 601,000 of those were from violence. The chief scientific advisor to the Ministry of Defense, Roy Anderson, describes the methods used in the study as robust and close to best practice. Another official said it was a tried and tested way of measuring mortality in conflict zones. So, slow news day. Oh, and of course, Saudi King Abdullah, whose country is a close U.S. ally this week, slammed the illegitimate foreign occupation of Iraq. I wonder who's doing that. It's slow news week, ladies and gentlemen. The U.S. Embassy in Baghdad circulated a memo to all Americans working for the U.S. government in the green zone, ordering them to wear protective gear whenever they were outside in the green zone. That's the protected zone, including just moving from one building to another. Guerrillas have managed to lob a number of rockets into the safe zone. We are, General McCaffrey, the former leader of the war on drugs, and we did win that, didn't we? Now issues a dire assessment of the situation in Iraq based on a recent round of meetings there with senior commanders. The population is in despair, says retired General Barry McCaffrey. He compiled the document in his capacity as a professor at West Point. Life in many of the urban areas is now desperate, he says. His bottom line is that the United States military is in strategic peril, a sharp contrast to his previous views. He's especially critical of the government of Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki. It is despised by the Sunnis, he writes, is seen as untrustworthy and incompetent by the Kurds, and now enjoys little credibility among the Shia populations from which it emerged. Well, that would unify them, wouldn't it? Hatred of the government? That's what's unifying us. The government lacks dominance in every province, he added. No Iraqi government official, coalition soldier, diplomat, reporter, foreign non-governmental organization, or contractor can walk the streets of Baghdad, Mosul, Kirkuk, Basra, Tikrit, Najaf, Ramadi without heavily armed protection. Militias and armed bands are in some ways more capable of independent operations than the Iraqi army, he says. The result of our efforts 5 years along is that the sophistication, numbers, and lethality of the insurgency go up, not down, as they incur staggering battle losses, unquoting General McCaffrey. He does say in Anbar province there's a growing groundswell of Sunni tribal opposition to al-Qaeda in Iraq terror operations. He says it's still possible to develop a stable Iraq, but he says we have very little time left. Well, don't tell them. That's just giving them warning. And, ladies and gentlemen, slow news week, don't you know, looking toward the future. There is a referendum coming up in Iraq. That's right, more purple fingers. The Iraqi constitution mandates a referendum on control of the oil-rich city of Kirkuk. It's under the control of the Arab part of Iraq, but the Kurds want it. It's a city that Saddam ethnically cleansed of Kurds, but the Kurds are coming back, and they want that city and its oil. That wouldn't be a flashpoint. A recent report from the Washington Institute for Near East Policy asserts Kirkuk is as likely as Baghdad to produce a calamity that can fracture Iraq. And just today, Iraq's Justice Minister, Hashem al-Shibli, has resigned. He's a Sunni. The BBC says one of his motives was the contradiction between his constitutional duty to oversee that upcoming referendum and the fact that he and his party oppose it. See, in Iraq, they haven't really learned about democracy yet, because in Iraq, when the chief law enforcement officer has a conflict of interest, he resigns. Iraqi parliamentarians are rebelling against the decision of the cabinet this week to implement that referendum. And the justice minister, in resigning, says, quote, the political process is heading toward a dead end. So, a slow news week. Hello, welcome to the show.
Another opening, another show. In Philly, Boston, or Baltimore. A chance for stage folks to say hello. Another opening of another show. Another job that you hope at last will make your future forget your past. Another pain where the ulcers grow. Another opening of another show. 4 weeks you rehearse and rehearse. 3 weeks and it couldn't be worse. 1 week, will it ever be right? Then out of that hat is that big first night. The overture is about to start. You cross your fingers and hold your heart. It's curtain time, and away we go. Another opening of another show. You rehearse and rehearse. 3 whole weeks and it couldn't be worse. 1 week, will it ever be right? Then out of that hat is that big first night. The overture is about to start. You cross your fingers and hold your heart. It's curtain time and away we go. Another opening. Just another opening.
Starts with just a little glance now. Right away you're thinking about romance now. You know you ought to take it slower, but you just can't wait to get to know her. A brand new love affair is such a beautiful thing. But if you're not careful, think about the pain it can bring. It makes you feel so bad. It makes your heart feel sad. It makes your days go wrong. It makes your nights so long. You've got to keep in mind, love is here. Today and it's gone. Tomorrow it's here and gone so fast. Right now you think that she's perfection. This time is really an exception. Well, you know I hate to be a downer, but I'm the guy she left before you found her. Well, I'm not saying you won't have a good luck with her, but I keep on remembering things like they were. She made me feel so bad. She made my heart feel sad. She made my day wrong and made my night so long. You got to keep in mind, love is here. Today and it's gone. Tomorrow is here and gone so fast. Thank you. love is here today and it's gone.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer welcoming you to this edition of the show. Thanks to the people at Humboldt State for showing up on Friday night. It was a lovely time had by many, including me. And thanks to the people at KHSU at Humboldt State University for naming their radio station after me. Yes, the HS in KHSU stands for yours truly. And now, ladies and gentlemen, time for me to read the trades for you. Rough trades this week. Rough. First, from PR Week, what do you do when you got a scandal at Walter Reed? You hire a PR firm? I'll read it for you. Dateline Washington. The Washington Headquarters Services, a provider of operational support to several Department of Defense agencies, has hired a PR agency on behalf of the President's Commission on Care for Americans. For America's returning wounded warriors in the aftermath of the controversy that's erupted over conditions at Walter Reed. The government has awarded a contract to LMW Strategies, based in Bethesda, Maryland, a no-bid contract through August 1st of this year. That's nice, those no-bid contracts. You don't have to bid. The contracting officer for the contract did not return calls for comment. The firm has been hired to provide strategic communications to the Presidential Commission to review the health care provided to wounded soldiers. Another source, PRWatch.org. Says LMW Strategies is run by Lorraine McHugh Whitkind, a former communications director for Senator Hillary Clinton. And the contract is worth $100,000. So there'll be good communication services on the subject. We know that. But now, ladies and gentlemen, also from a trade from E.E. Times, publication regarding electronic engineering, for Rural West, digital TV may be lost in translation. What? Stick around. Many Americans are aware that the looming broadcast television transition from analog to digital in February 2009, yeah, right, will render your TV tuners useless without a converter box, but far fewer are aware the digital transition could have the unintended consequences of eliminating over-the-air TV broadcasts to some entire parts of the country, especially in the rural West. Millions of rural dwellers in the western United States, Colorado, Arizona, New Mexico, and Wyoming owe their TV reception to so-called translator stations, which relay broadcasts for metropolitan areas. It captures a transmission and then broadcasts on a different band. Some 5,000 translators are in use today in the United States, according to the trade group that serves owners of translators. Most of them are owned and operated by private TV stations. Some are overseen by community cooperatives or universities. But now these translator stations are specifically exempted. Oh, sorry, for now, they're specifically exempted from the digital TV transition. But since many are nonprofit, in some cases money-losing ventures, there's a growing fear that some will not be able to make the required investments in equipment to receive, convert, and rebroadcast digital signals following the transition. You see what I'm saying? They can stay on the air, but they won't be able to receive the signal they're supposed to pass on to the rural folks who watch them. Quote, a lot of translator stations are being operated by community groups that don't have a lot of money to plow into new equipment, says George Borsari, a Washington-based attorney for the group that represents the translators. The translators that are owned by TV stations themselves don't receive additional advertising revenue from the outlying areas that the translators help them to reach. They're basically operated as a public service. They cost the TV station money. According to an engineer with KPNX-TV in Phoenix, the cost of upgrading a translator to receive and broadcast a digital signal is between $5,000 and $25,000. That may not seem like a lot, but since most translators are not money-making propositions, it's a really tough thing for the co-ops to have the money to keep up and maintain the equipment, he says. Forcing even a small number of established translators to go dark, presumably leaving viewers cut off from any over-the-air TV, would be a political cherry bomb, says one consultant. In Arizona, about 30% of the population lives outside the main metropolitan areas, and many of them get their TV and radio, from translators. Over time, says this consultant, it would make sense for all translators to go digital, but that would likely take years and cost millions. Oh, look, it's just flyover country. They don't need TV. A snarky conclusion that I come to, ladies and gentlemen, when I read the trades for you, copyrighted feature of this broadcast, don't you know? Now, ladies and gentlemen, turning to perhaps more significant things. Hard to say, really. Remember a few weeks ago when North Korea agreed to end or put limitations on its nuclear program, and it was greeted as a triumph for the Bush administration's diplomatic approach to North Korea. Now comes this. Dateline Seoul, the Reuters news agency, reports this. North Korea's nuclear test last October was a failure and gives no credence to Pyongyang's claim to being a nuclear weapon state. This, according to the CIA director, Michael Hayden, quoted in a South Korean newspaper this week. South Korean officials and experts have said the blast produced a relatively low-yield explosion. Quote, the United States does not recognize North Korea as a nuclear weapon state, Hayden was quoted by a South Korean defense official in the newspaper, because the nuclear test last year was a failure. So That might be why they decided not to do it anymore, because you see what I'm saying, ladies and gentlemen? See what my point here? The inspector generals have been busy, or inspectors general, excuse me. Maybe good reason to get rid of them. Dateline Washington, the number of foreigners targeted for removal from the United States has soared to more than 623,000, even as the federal government has dedicated nearly $205 million over the past 4 years to deploy new fugitive apprehension teams. This, according to the Department of Homeland Security's Inspector General, says the 52 fugitive operations teams have been hobbled by insufficient detention space, inadequate databases, and the inability to track individual teams' performances. A new wireless network meant to connect the Departments of Justice, Homeland Security, and Treasury is at a high risk of failure, according to Justice Department Inspector General Glenn Fine. He concludes the project known as the Integrated Wireless Network is doomed to fail, and that the partnership between Justice and Homeland Security is fractured. Sound like the grown-ups to you? Despite over 6 years of development and more than $195 million in funding, the wireless network project does not appear to be on the path to providing the seamless system that was envisioned, Fine said, and he blamed uncertain funding mechanisms, the fractured partnership between Justice and Homeland Security, and the lack of an effective governing structure. So, to enable federal agencies to communicate better. Wasn't that something we were supposed to get right on after 9/11? Answer, yes. And a senior Bush political appointee at the Interior Department has repeatedly altered scientific field reports to minimize protections for imperiled species and disclose confidential information to private groups seeking to affect policy decisions, according to the Interior Department's Inspector General. These guys really, somebody really needs to. The report on Julie McDonald, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Fish and Wildlife and Parks, said she frequently sought to reshape the agency's scientific reports in an effort to ease the impact of decisions on private landowners. The case has been referred to Interior's top officials for potential administrative action. McDonald's degree is in civil engineering. She has no formal educational background in natural sciences, but she repeatedly instructed fish and wildlife scientists to change their recommendations on identifying critical habitats despite her lack of expertise. Well, don't forget, half of expertise is tease. Ladies and gentlemen, I believe it's time for the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Let's start at the top. What do you say?
The system failed you, and it failed our troops. And we're gonna fix it. I met some of the soldiers who had been housed in Building 18. I was disturbed by their accounts of what went wrong. It is not right to have someone volunteer to wear a uniform and not get the best possible care. I apologize
for
what they went through, mm-hmm. And we're going to fix the problem.
All right. President Bush had a photo op with Walter Reed, maybe set up by that new PR firm. Deadline Bangor, Maine, bruised feelings from the transfer of radio broadcast rights for University of Maine sports prompted the school's president to acknowledge that it owes apology to two of its top benefactors, Stephen King and his wife Tabitha. The rights to the University of Maine sports have been awarded to Clear Channel. Clear Channel owned WVOM in Bangor. WZON, owned by the Kings, had been the university's flagship station. Well, I recognize the confusion between WVOM and WZON. The Kings deserve better treatment than we afforded them, said University President Robert Kennedy. His remarks were in response to an email from Stephen King saying, "Tabby and I feel we were treated shabbily by the athletic department." Or, "Shabby and I feel we were treated tabbily." The British Foreign Ministry has issued... No, sorry. The Israeli Foreign Ministry, I'm just trying to parse this, has issued a formal apology to Britain's Deputy Consul General to Israel following an upsetting incident during a visit to the Prime Minister's office in Jerusalem, where she, the Deputy Consul General, was subjected to a strip search despite having diplomatic credentials. Janet Rogan is one of the top diplomats in Israel, but that apparently did not factor into the consideration of Prime Minister Olmert's security detail. Security guards demanded Rogan go through a physical security check, to which she refused, presenting her diplomatic credentials. An exchange of harsh words developed, and Rogan was ultimately taken behind a screen and physically searched, having to lift up her shirt. Kate Middleton, girlfriend of Prince William, has won a victory in her battle against harassment after the London Daily Mirror admitted it should not have published a picture of her taken in the street. The newspaper said it got it wrong after lawyers for Kate Middleton made a harassment complaint to the press watchdog over the picture. "We got it wrong," says the paper, "and we sincerely regret that." Bridgeport, Connecticut Mayor John Fabrizi apologized this week for speaking on behalf of a 22-year-old man convicted of having sex with a 13-year-old girl and impregnating her twice. Quote, "I realize with 20/20 hindsight my appearance before the court was completely inappropriate and gave the wrong impression," Fabrizi said. "I should never have agreed to be a character witness for my son's friend, given the serious charges he pleaded guilty to. To be clear, I do not condone this young man's actions in any way whatsoever." Fabrizi had asked a judge for leniency, as the judge settled Juan Carlos Camacho. Last year, Fabrizi admitted to using cocaine and abusing alcohol while serving as mayor. He apologized for those actions in a tearful confession, which we've reported to you here. Through his lawyer, Australian detainee at Gitmo, David Hicks, this week apologized to his family, Australia, and the U.S., and vowed not to betray all the Australians who had supported him during his detention in Guantanamo Bay. This in a statement issued after he made his court appearance, his court-appointed lawyer Major Morey said Hicks had been too nervous to make the statement in court. More about Hicks momentarily, because he made a good deal. That was a good deal he made to get out of Gitmo. Royal Marine rifleman, one of 15 British service members being held captive in Iran, apologized on government television for entering Iranian waters without permission. There were two of those, weren't there? I think there was another one. Well, yeah, two. There were two. The Connecticut state agriculture officials say they will look to build safeguards at the New Britain plant that produced the contaminated chocolate milk that sickened several old Saybrook students and led to a four-state product recall this week. State Department of Agriculture Commissioner F. Philip Prelley says it's too early to know what should be done, but possible changes could include adding more checks on the product. In a letter to the parents of the students, officials of Gaida Milk and Ice Cream apologized to the children and their families for the tainted chocolate milk. French Quarter Commission Chairman Ralph Lupin, Dateline New Orleans, has sent a written apology to New Orleans Sanitation Director Veronica White for calling her a bitch during a commission meeting last week. He said he did not remember the exact words he used at the meeting, but acknowledged they were offensive to you and apparently upset you unnecessarily. Please accept my sincere apologies for any statements that were considered offensive. It was certainly not my intent. He continued, I have the highest regard, blah, blah, blah. The problem, the discussion is over the new 33-gallon wheeled plastic trash bins to be lifted by mechanized arms on new garbage trucks. Many French Quarter residents say the city is forcing them to use the carts, even though they're too big to store in the narrow side alleys common in the neighborhood. And the commission fears that the bins left on sidewalks hours after the garbage trucks have passed will be eyesores, hindering pedestrian traffic. During the discussion at the commission's meeting, Lupin said, I don't understand Ms. White's obstinance other than that she's a bitch, unquote. In Britain, a national conservation charity has apologized for culling 15 goats involved in a trial grazing project. The National Trust grazed a herd of 18 wild goats in Dorset as part of a land restoration program. It decided on a cull after the herd repeatedly escaped and became a hazard to traffic. Now it's apologized after it received complaints over the decision and offers of homes for the remaining three goats. So they culled almost all the goats. Well, those are the apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, and it is, as you know, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Since I've been gone, you've had your number changed. Remains the same. Now I've been loving you, and you've been loving me so long. Baby, what's wrong? But I'm not acting strange. Welcome home. Nothing's wrong. So I'm saying, baby, 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 you can have my private number.
This is Le Show. And ladies and gentlemen, you know, there's been so much talk about Mike Brown, Mike Heck of a Job Brownie Brown. He got a new consulting job this week, and he served sort of as the symbol of the personnel policies of at least part of the Bush administration. But, you know, he was I'm not going to say he's qualified for the job that he had at FEMA, but on the other hand, his boss, Mike Chertoff, during Katrina, you may remember, was in Atlanta attending a bird flu conference. Mike Brown, yes, he was worried about moosing his hair and wearing the right clothes, but at least he was nearer the disaster. Mike Chertoff was in Atlanta attending a bird flu conference. And Mike Chertoff wasn't, of course, the president's first choice for the job of director of the Department of Homeland Security. No, that was, the previous choice was Bernard Carrick. It became known this week that Rudy Giuliani told a grand jury that his former chief investigator remembered having briefed him on some aspects of Bernard Carrick's relationship with a company suspected of ties to organized crime before Giuliani appointed Carrick as police commissioner. Giuliani said he had no memory of the briefing, but he did not dispute it had taken place. This is a new version of what information was before him in the summer of 2000 as he was debating Carrick's appointment as the city's top law enforcement officer. Giuliani also suggested that President Bush, suggested fairly forcefully that President Bush appoint Carrick as head of the Department of Homeland Security. Carrick pleaded guilty last summer to a properly allowing a company, Interstate Industrial Corporation, to do $165,000 worth of free renovations on his Bronx apartment in late 1999 and 2000. The company has denied paying for the work and has disputed any association with organized crime, but the two brothers who run it have been indicted in the Bronx on charges they lied under oath about their dealings with Carrick. And, according to the Washington Post, federal prosecutors have told Bernie Carrick that he's likely to be charged with several felonies, including tax evasion, conspiracy to commit wiretapping. This is the guy that Rudy Giuliani wanted and President Bush wanted to have head of the Department of Homeland Security. By the way, Giuliani was partnered with Carrick in a security firm called Giuliani Carrick, part of Giuliani Partners, which he established after leaving office in 2001. Carrick resigned his position as a partner after he was nominated for the Homeland Security job. The FBI is investigating loans Carrick received while he was in private business with Giuliani, say the sources, as well as information Carrick omitted from a mortgage application. He turned down an offer to plead guilty to federal charges that would have required him to serve prison time. His attorney says he's done nothing wrong. And his attorney says he's not going to plead to something that he didn't do. Well, of course not. He's not in Guantanamo. Giuliani's office has declined to comment on the latest news about Bernie Carrick. In addition to the charges involving false information and tax law, the U.S. Attorney's Office in New York, well, we'll replace that guy, is also threatening to charge Carrick with conspiracy to commit illegal wiretapping in his dealings with the last year's GOP candidate for New York Attorney General, Jeanine Pirro. Nice people doing nice things. Carrick was a narcotics detective in 1990 when he met Giuliani. A week after his nomination as Department of Homeland Security Secretary, Carrick was forced to withdraw his name from nomination. The stated reason was his failure to pay Social Security taxes for a nanny. But other issues had also surfaced, including favors he did for romantic partners. He once dispatched a homicide detective to find his girlfriend's lost cell phone and more serious legal concerns. And, of course, his abortive affair, romance, with publisher Judith Regan, she of the abortive O.J. Simpson, If I Killed Her book, an affair that was carried on in other, among other places, in an apartment that was used or acquired by the city of New York as a rest and recreation spot for first responders during 9/11. In other words,
when New York needed correcting, Carrick was there. With a countenance just as grim as a cleric's stare. When his house, it needed fixin', there was no money, he was Nixon. When the mobsters would mix in, Carrick was there.
Carrick was there.
When the city was on fire, Carrick was there. Taking time out only for a torrid affair. Just to make a good impression, he used a flat meant for decompression of the guys in his profession. Carrick was there.
Carrick was there.
Carrick was there.
Carrick was there.
Carrick was there. When Mayor Rudy had his passion, Carrick was there. When the time had come to cash in, when Iraq needed policing, Carrick was there. Though some said it was a fleecing, could Carrick care? It was 3 long months of training, then the crap, it started raining. So without complaining, Carrick was out of there. When Homeland needed securing, Carrick was there. But his nanny records were found in disrepair. So Bernie took a powder before the questioning got louder. On the pages of the tabloids, Carrick was there, was there. When Bush did his re-swearing, Carrick was there. Tickets to the balls, he had more than his share. Things about him just smell big. Is he rogue or is he zealot? Everywhere except in Rudy's hair, Carrick is there.
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 Ladies and gentlemen, our news about our friend, Pakistan. First of all, in case you're wondering, it's a democracy. That word comes from the United States of America, which should know. U.S. said it is not pressuring President Pervez Musharraf to allow the exiled former prime ministers, Benazir Bhutto and Nawaz Sharif, to return to the country. See, it's a democracy when you keep your predecessors out on pain of putting them in jail should they set foot back. Ryan Crocker, the outgoing U.S. ambassador to Pakistan, we're sending him to Iraq next. He's good. Said it was for Pakistan to decide the form of democracy it wanted. It wants, apparently, to have the general heading the army be president and banning the former prime ministers from setting foot in the country. It's that form of democracy they want, you see. There's no dictatorship in Pakistan, says Crocker. Sharif and Bhutto have blasted the West for hypocrisy in working to help democracy in neighboring Afghanistan, but not in Pakistan. Both ex-premiers are certain to be detained on arrival, Musharraf has said. And The International Crisis Group has condemned President Musharraf's failure to curb Pakistan's extremist Islamic schools. A report released this week by the group, headed by former Australian Foreign Minister Gareth Evans, says promises made by General Musharraf in 2002 to reform the madrasas are, quote, in shambles. That's a small town in the southwest of Pakistan. Focusing in the city of Karachi is a hotbed of radical madrasa activity. Reflecting the situation across Pakistan, the report says banned sectarian and jihadi groups supported by networks of mosques and madrasas continue to operate openly with consequences for internal stability and regional and international security. The madrasas are active centers of jihadi militancy, and even those without direct links to violence promote an ideology that promotes religious justification for such attacks. The Pakistani government, continues the report, has yet to take any of the overdue and necessary steps to control religious extremism in Karachi and the rest of the country. Musharraf's periodic declarations of tough action, given in response to international pressure, are invariably followed by retreat. And the report blames his half-hearted efforts on his dependence for political support from religious hardliners. Oh, well, that explains everything. It's politics. So I guess they are a democracy. There's a lot of fulminating about the five British sailors detained by Iran. What's happening to the 15 British sailors? What's happened to the five Iranian officials captured in a U.S. military raid in January? That remains a mystery. High-level Iraqi officials have called for their release. The Iranians have disappeared into a U.S.-sanctioned coalition detention system, according to the Asia Times. A spokesman for the multinational forces in Iraq said this week they are still in coalition detention, but provided no further information regarding their status or treatment. See, we're too civilized to put them on TV, so you know where they are. Who were they? Well, a U.S. State Department official with knowledge of the situation says the Iranians were informed of the status of the diplomats after their detention through the Swiss, since we don't have relations with Iran. The Iranians are not being charged with anything, according to Scott Horton, Columbia University School of Law. Under Iraqi law, detainees identified as insurgents who are deliberately engaged in hostilities are supposed to be charged in civilian court within 14 days. To detain them longer without charging them, detention authorities must provide justification for doing so. That's under Iraqi law. U.S. detention camps in Iraq currently hold more than 15,000 prisoners who've been held without charge or access to tribunals for months, even years. That according to the New York Times. And now, news of racial matters in this country. You may have seen that there was an event this week to watch the Tuskegee Airmen. The Tuskegee Airmen, more than 60 years after they distinguished themselves in war, received the Congressional Gold Medal, the highest honor that Congress can bestow on civilians. They were African-American flying aces who were discriminated against before and after they went. But they finally got their salute this week. Meanwhile, this from the New York Times, a racially charged advertising character who for decades has been relegated to a minor role in the marketing of the products that still bear his name is taking center stage in a campaign that's giving him a Madison Avenue makeover. Uncle Ben, the symbol for more than 60 years of Uncle Ben's rice and side dishes, has been promoted to chairman of the company. This is an interesting idea, but for me it still has a very high cringe factor, says Luke Visconti, partner at Diversity Incorporated Media, which publishes a magazine devoted to diversity in the workplace. There's a lot of baggage associated with the image of Uncle Ben, Visconti said, which the makeover is glossing over. Uncle Ben is being reborn as Ben, an accomplished businessman with an opulent office, a busy schedule, an extensive travel itinerary, and a penchant for sharing what the company calls his grains of wisdom about rice and life. But he still has no last name. Vincent Howell, president for the food division of the Master Foods unit of Mars Incorporated, says because consumers described Uncle Ben as having, quote, a timeless element to him, we didn't want to significantly change him. What's powerful to me is to show an African-American icon in a position of prominence and an authority. As an African-American, Mr. Howell said, he makes me feel so proud. In addition to Uncle Ben, of course, there was Aunt Jemima, who sold pancake mix and ads that sometimes had her exclaiming, tempt your appetite. There was also a grinning black chef named Rastus, who represented cream of wheat hot cereal. Uncle Ben, Aunt Jemima, and Rastus have been redesigned and kept on basically as silent spokespeople on boxes, packages. But about 18 months ago, Master Foods, the company that owns Uncle Ben, decided to reach out to our consumers and gauge attitudes towards Uncle Ben. There were no negative responses or references to the stereotyped aspects of the character, said Howell. Rather, the consumers focused on positive images, quality, warmth, timelessness, and the legend of Uncle Ben. That encouraged the idea that we could bring him to life. Through the magic of marketing, says the ad agency executive in charge, we've made him the chairman. Uncle Ben's office is reflective of a man with great wisdom who has done great things. Magazine ads carry the theme, Ben Knows Best. Visitors to the website can browse through his email messages, examine his date book, and read his executive's memoranda. It's important consumers begin to hear from Uncle Ben, says Howell, based in Los Angeles. Hey, give me a call. There is more on this, including the plans to now perhaps redesign Jemima as well. The cream of wheat product got a new owner, and they say, quote, we're doing consumer focus work right now to understand how important the character is. If any changes were to be made to Rastus, the former cream of wheat chef, says the spokesperson, you would need to be very careful and you would want to do it with dignity. More on this story moments from now here on Le Show.
My baby says you're traveling on the one after 909. I said, move over, honey, I'm traveling on that line. I said, move over once, move over twice. Back, run right home. Then I find I got the number wrong. Well, said you're traveling on the one after 909. I said, move over, honey, I'm traveling on that line. I said, move over once, move over twice. Come on, baby, don't be cold as ice. I'm traveling on that line.
virtual trading floor of Corium Slocum Oliver. This is Mind Your Own Business. I'm Mike Tucciniello on the trading floor. Wall Street took a chill pill this week, courtesy of the good doctor at the Fed. Ben Bernanke, whose prose lacks the fog-like opacity of his predecessor, Alan Greenspan, gave an all-too-clear diagnosis of the housing market when he said, in effect, that the only hot part of that market was in FEMA trailers. It was savvy investors to the exits faster than you can say, wounded bull. The market wants to see the next figures for sales of existing homes go up, and it's holding its breath till then. Maybe Dr. Bernanke should prescribe a good dose of inhaling. The extreme makeover of historic advertising icons is going to the next level this week. After Uncle Ben became Ben, the board chairman of his company, and Aunt Jemima became Jemima, the pancake-loving heart surgeon, next in line is Cream of Wheat's smiling chef, known to generations before the civil rights era as Rastus. What's in store for this culinary icon as the brand gets a new owner? The man himself is here to talk about that with us today. Rastus, welcome to the trading floor.
Well, Mr. Mike, it's good to be here. It's good to be anywhere. You know, they had me cooped up in that efficiency apartment for nigh on to 20 years.
Really? Well, of course, you have been soft-pedaled in the brand's marketing, mm-hmm. but what have you been doing all this time?
Some abstract painting. I got into that. But really just, cashing the checks, playing some dominoes with the neighbors.
Mm-hmm. So I imagine you're excited about the focus group testing about your character that's going on right now.
It gives me hope, that my character is going to grow. I could talk a lot faster than this if they let me, but they say it's just not part of my brand DNA. So,
Are you participating in the testing at all?
Well, I've been down to the testing place one time or two, But these folks with the clipboards and everything, they give me the willies.
Well, actually not the willies per se, since the owners of the Willie character have now made him a distinguished philanthropist.
With a minor in rocket science or something, they tell me.
What have the marketing people at Cream of Wheat Corporation told you about their plans for you?
Mm-hmm. Well, they might go this way. Well, I'm a 4-star chef in Aspen, who just insists I'm making a creamy cereal for all my customers every morning. They might go this way, where I'm a big food scientist who's discovered the perfect breakfast, Or they might go the other way.
Yeah, which way would that be?
I don't rightly know. I do know they're going to make me younger and let's wrinkle up, and they keeping me black.
And, Rastus, what would your goal for your character be?
Well, like I say, let me talk normal-like.
Uh-huh.
And maybe they let me be a marketing director of the company so, I could develop my own character. Maybe give myself a last name, Rastus Jones, something like that.
Oh, that's asking a lot.
Mm-hmm. Either that or, an apartment big enough for a plasma screen.
Well, Rastus, however your character develops, savvy investors are predicting a big uptick in ad spending. So, best of luck.
Well, I guess that means I have to go.
You and me both. That's Mind Your Own Business for today. Tomorrow, why derivatives seem so unoriginal. Till then, from the virtual trading floor of Corium Slocum Oliver, I'm Mike Tucciniello saying this week, mind the business of someone you love. So long.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America by WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, short wave. Around the world via the internet. Now you're talking at two different locations on your computer, live and archived, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, whenever you want it. Available on the Big 104 in Berlin, on both Sirius and XM satellite radio. Available as a free download from www.audible.com/theshow and available as a free podcast from kcrw.com. And it'll be just like charging money for all that, if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. And a farewell to Tupper Saucy. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve McAtip, and Le Show Chapeau to the Pittsburgh and San Diego desks. Le Show playlists available at harryshearer.com. Le Show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.